This week's podcast sponsor is Stand 4 Clothing. Stand 4 Clothing is a street style and sportwear brand based here in Cork. The SF brand is more than just a clothes producer. It's a culture for people chasing their mastery and inspiring others with their passions. SF's founder truly believes in dedication and embraces ambition. Born out of the 90s hip-hop, basketball and graffiti culture where there were two tribes, kings that praised quantity. They were all about getting their tags everywhere, quickly and often. Their tag would be seen all over the city, but it'd be sloppy. On the other side, the real wild style tribe. They were more about quality, taking time to master letter structures and color combinations as a true art, with attention to every detail. Quality over quantity. This is reflected in the founder's personality and his approach to every corner of his life up to this day. On his journey, Thomas has had to learn and develop a lot of skills to fulfill his dream. From design, textile technologies and print, to running a team and a full-scale business. Now he's also an awarded branding consultant running a creative agency. In his free time, he's a basketball player, a photographer, and still writes graffiti. 20 years of passion have gone into the brand. They don't just buy t-shirts and print on them. It's all sourced and manufactured in Europe. They develop their own fabrics, graphics, designs, and they cut their own shapes and patterns, creating their own very recognizable image. I'm sure there's plenty of pieces and fabrics that'll blow your mind. Like us all, the pandemic has hit hard. It's putting a new collection on hold, but they're busy finalizing their biggest launch in the background. The guys over at SF Clothing have given Isolated Ape listeners a 30% discount from their online store. So head over to www.standfor.ie and add the discount code APE30 at the checkout. That's www.standfor.ie and add the discount code APE30 at the checkout. APE30. Peace. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Isolated Ape podcast episode number 25. This week's guest is John Relihan. He is a pitmaster, a chef, originally from Kerry, but worked all over the world. Real passionate guy, really, really passionate about his craft. It was great to see that come out of him. You'll certainly hear it in the podcast. We discuss his life in Kerry and starting there, and then how he ended up on Jamie Oliver's 15 program. So we discuss what the program is, how it works, and what came out of it for him. So he's had plenty of highlights in his career as a chef. He's also carried the Olympic torch, so we have a little recap about that. And we also have a really great recipe for beer can chicken. So yeah, if you want to have a listen to the recipe as he's talking through, like I say, John's a real passionate guy. He gives you a full explanation of how to do it, how to barbecue it. It's mouth-watering is the word I'm looking for. So if you do go ahead and cook it, post it on Instagram, give us a tag us in it, and we'll share it as well. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Real fun chat with pitmaster John Relihan. Peace. Perfect. So welcome to Isolated Ape podcast. And today's guest is John Relihan. There we go. That's we got correct. It right this time.
Relihan,
So John, the chef, John, the pitmaster, John, who the obviously we spent a bit of time working together for a short period. And the two things that I take from that, low and slow.
Yeah,
is a term that I heard a lot you're using. And something that I do now myself is the wooden spoon with the herbs tied on the end of it, man. And I know it seems very simple to someone who, but you know, it's something we started using recently.
Yeah, it's all about the love with the hairbrush, you know. That's pretty magical stuff, you know. You dip it right into butter and you just coat all your meat with it, and yeah, what's wrong with that? Like,
nothing. Yeah, but it was such a simple idea and such a simple thing that I thought, but wow. And is that something I'm not, you know, I certainly have never worked in a kitchen, and is that something that's quite a normal kind of thing?
Not necessarily, no. A few places, yes. But the hairbrush, it's like, you know, when you baste your meat, they say baste your meat, but If you want to baste your meat, you baste it right. So you put loads of butter on top. You can put spices, rubs, lime, and use rosemary and thyme, herbs. Some people use paintbrushes. I just use herbs. Herbs. It's more flavor. And it keeps your meat proper juicy. It forms that little seal on the outside. So all the steam is in the inside, and when you eat that meat, it just explodes, you know?
John, your passion for food and meat especially, it's amazing, man. It's it's great to hear. So obviously I was going to kind of start at the start and work our way through, but I think kind of, you know, as we're talking about where we met and where we were, so I was opening Urban Jungle and you were opening Holy Smoke here in Cork.
Correct,
so
yeah.
That was what, to, was it 2015 or so, about 5 years ago?
Yeah, Jesus. That was 2015. Seems, I don't know, like it's time has gone so quick, but yet so slow as well at the same time, which is a good thing. But it was in 2015, my God, yeah. I left London, I left Barbacoa, the Jamie Oliver restaurant,
yeah,
came to Cork, set up Holy Smoke, and spent a couple of wonderful years there, just cooking with some incredible people. I miss Cork, I love Cork. Cork is a great
spot, place. I've been living in Cork now 8 years, and it's the longest I've ever lived in one place. So yeah. I did a lot of moving around as a kid, and also then as an adult, I think it just led on to me not being afraid to move places. Yeah. But I've been in Cork longer than I've ever been anywhere. My kids are very settled here. I'm not going anywhere until they finish school anyway, you know, so it's a cool spot.
Yeah, no, it is. It's wonderful. Like, it was great just going to work there in the morning, like grabbing a coffee and going in and just cooking meat over the fire, you know, and Decky, Billy and Eddie and all of them, you know. So it was like Decky is the head chef there and currently still is the head chef.
Perfect,
And what a guy, like, you know, big passion. And that's lovely to work with people like that. I only feed off of good people, you know. If someone has the same energy and the drive, I love that. That's where you succeed. That's where you keep pushing and you keep pushing the boundaries.
Having the passion and you know, if you're passionate about something and you put the work into it, then it's going to come out well, you know?
Yeah. And you know, you work hard, you put in the hours, like, you know, from a customer coming in, they think, oh, you know, the chef just serves it there in 10 minutes. It's taken about 18 hours to probably cook that piece of meat. And it took about 6 hours of crying in front of the smoker saying, I need to go to sleep now, you know? But that's the best thing about it, you know, from festivals to what I'm doing now up in Dublin with the company KSG. Love it, like, you know, you put the hard work in, you get a beautiful result at the end.
That's it. And I think it's, you know, the job satisfaction from that as well. You know, I often say that I've got a couple of friends that work as a barber and a hairdresser, and I've got mates who work as builders. And the one thing I noticed that there's an end product. There's something that you've started as nothing, and then there's an end product, and generally there's a very happy customer at the end of that product, you know? And that whole kind of satisfaction seems to tie in together. You mentioned KSG there. I was, and again, I saw when I was doing a little bit of research, I saw KSG pop up on your Twitter feed and what have you. So tell me a little bit more about them. What do they kind of provide food for other big companies and things like that? Or?
They do, yeah. Now, KSG, it's a big company. It's one of Ireland's biggest catering companies, but it's not even, it's a catering company, but I wouldn't even call it a catering company because we cook everything on site, in-house, fresh, using the best farmers, using the local suppliers. The drive, the passion that they have for food, it's another level completely. Innovation is all the time going. Research and travel, like there last year, all before the lockdown. Like I had a few holidays planned this year. But last year, like we went to New York and Miami doing research on food and eating some of the best food in Miami and New York, and then coming back and just coming up with new ideas, getting inspired by other people, and kind of feeding off of that and picking a culture from around the world and creating something and putting it into a site, like whether it's a Microsoft or, like, we cater for a lot of big businesses. And
It's so fun. When you're working for one of these big businesses, say Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and you go in and there's food available there for you to purchase, or it comes as part of the KSG chefs, KSG staff of running that kitchen in that site. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. In different sites that we have.
Yeah.
And I'm not too sure who caters for those ones, but the ones that we do, yeah, we would provide all of that. So it's about giving kind of restaurant feel or street food feel or a different experience to the person that's working in the office. Because when people work in an office, you know, it's hard work as well as doing your work, sitting down and concentrating on that. You always leave to go somewhere else. So we provide the food within there, but we try to give it different and completely feel. So when you're on your 30-minute break, we want you to feel like that you are away from your work completely, and you're eating a plate of food that it feels like street food from Thailand, or a Japanese sushi roll, or somewhere you're eating Norwegian food, or you're eating American food, or South American, or Italian, or Spanish, or even just simply good Irish food as well.
You're just giving that, like you say, I work in an office and we go over, we're in Mahan, so Man Point would be, you know, generally the place that you'd go over and get a bit of food, or you might go to the garage for a roll on a certain day, but our favorite day is always Thursday because it's the local market, Thursday. So we love that because you got so many options, and again, you're having a conversation with the person as they're making it for you as well, or at least serving it up, you know, that's ideal. In KSG, is it such a variation for you? Is that good? Because from my time with you, you were a pit master, very much meat based. Have you?
Yeah, like I guess through my skills and my career, like I started back at 15 in the Jamie Oliver thing in 2003. And
how old were you then?
Well, I was 16, 17.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So I grew up in Kerry. Small village, couple of hundred people. Left there, hopped on the plane for the first time to London. Saw Jamie Oliver on TV one night while I was lying in bed, and and I was like, I want to be a chef. And I always wanted to be, because I grew up as like an only child, and I was cooking for my mother, and I kind of grew into food that way. So I was cooking since I was really young, burning sausages and eggs and stuff. I had the passion for it. Went to school in Ebbfield, started up home economics here, and even though home economics, you know, there was like sewing clothes and ironing, probably nothing got to do with food.
There was still certainly cooking parts of it. I remember it in school over in the UK. And this is a funny story, right, John? I was meant to tick the home economics box. So I came from a family where it was pretty much like, you know, you had to be self-sufficient and you had to look after yourself. And I knew I was going to be moving out of the house way before, like, you know, it wasn't like here in Ireland where I've got mates who are still in their 30s living at home with man because of certain reasons. Over there, it was like 18 out the door, you know. So I went to go to do home economics in school thinking I'll pick up skills here that I'll need. And I ticked the economics box. So I ended up in a business class, by the time we'd realized what was going on, it was too late to change and they couldn't do anything about it. So I ended up having to do economics as a GCSE rather than the home economics that I'd chosen. But yeah, madness. But to interrupt, that's mad, isn't it? Yeah.
And I think normally in the Irish schools, people choose the home economics because it's a little bit easier. They think it's easier. But then you get in there and it's like, you know, you're making simple stuff, you know? Which is great. I didn't finish school, actually. I was supposed to do my Leaving Cert, and I didn't finish my Leaving Cert. I left 2-3 months before my Leaving Cert. And it was a big problem because, like, a lot of people were saying, Jesus, like, you came all this way. Why are you leaving 3 months before, you know? Finish it. But then I wanted to leave. And I found it in my gut, and there was people telling me not to and people telling me go for it. And my mother and my family was great. They were like, basically do what you want. You know, and that's a great way to be, like, you know. They had trust in me. However, it wasn't like just do what you want. Think about it logistically, look at it, put it down on paper, put out the different paths, what's the positive and negatives, and then choose yourself and what you want. So I guess, yeah, applied, wrote a letter to Jamie, got a letter back a couple of months ago, you know, a month after.
Yeah.
With an English stamp on top, and I was like, fuck, this looks weird. What's this? Opened it up, and it was a letter.
Exciting.
Yeah, it was. Bloody hell, I was nervous as heck, you know. Hopped on the plane, had to get a neighbor to book the airline ticket because, you know, back then I was like, it's not as easy going onto your phone. We didn't even
have it. Yeah.
I'm thinking, where's all the pictures of this time? Like, there was no iPhones. There was no camera
phones. So it was disposable cameras, and then you had to get them developed and everything else. So you probably just didn't even bother.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's only a couple of years ago, 2003, you know, technically.
It's a bit mad.
So I couldn't find pictures of it, but. Yeah, I had to go to my neighbor's house to go on the internet and let it buzz up, you know, and all of that. And book Aer Lingus, you know, Shannon Airport. Yeah. Tear works coming out my eyes. Oh, I don't want to go.
Yeah, nerve-wracking. You were a young man, and it was a big move, like, you know.
Yeah, it's a country by going into a city that's 12 million people, you know, and, you know, it's a bit different, you know.
Big step.
But yeah, look, I went over and I did my first interview, and flew back and forth, met Jamie on the first day, told him my life story and blah, 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 blah. And we all really connected. Him and his team, like, are fantastic, and been in touch with them ever since, you know. And we're one big family, you know. And ended up just flying over a couple of months after. And then he told me on the Thursday that you're now starting college Monday morning. So I was like, great.
And for those that don't know, the 15 kind of foundation or program, I don't know what the right word is, but so that's for, it was set up for underprivileged kids.
It was,
in inner city kind of London kids, that, and trying to give them a way out and a career and a passion.
That's
and, correct. And yeah, okay.
Yeah, I came from one street, one road in Kerry, you know, that's
yeah.
different. But now, look, I was honored to get in. Now, like, unfortunately, no longer it's there at the moment, you know.
Yeah,
however,
yeah.
There's could be stuff for the future that he'll be looking at and stuff like that. But he has a big passion for helping other people, which that's why I kind of fell in love with the guy. His team. Like, he has a big team behind him. And it's, as I said before, it's all about the people you surround yourself with. And the same with Jamie Oliver. He surrounds himself with good people. They have the same drive, the same passion. And they created something special. Yeah. But yeah, look, I flew over on a Monday and started college. And ever since, I have not been back, pretty much.
Wow.
So, yeah.
But it was, how long does that course and that program last?
That course, like, I guess I done 2 years in the college and I done 2 years in 15. And then I graduated. I was, you know, like, I put a lot of hard work into it. And it wasn't easy because we didn't get a lot of money from that. And, like, I worked in Ireland while I was going to school as a bartender, cleaning bloody toilets and bars and floors and serving drinks. And I was doing all the dirty work there, you know. And then I worked in Allo's in Lestol, which is a restaurant that's still going, a beautiful restaurant, on the weekends. And then I worked with my uncle as well, landscaping, cutting grass, looking after horses and stuff like that.
Let's set you up for the chef world, right? Because you need that graft. You need to have the ability to put your head down and work hard in some sweaty arenas.
sweaty places and dirty places and like working out in the countryside down in Kerry where my uncle put me, picking stones. Like, for a lot of people that might watch this, they won't even have a clue what picking stones is. Like, it means you're fucked. you basically go into a field that you can't even see the end. You build up all the ground, you root it all up, and all those big massive stones, they don't disappear into ground. You have to pick them up and put them into a heap. Until I realized my uncle actually had he had a machine to do that, but instead he got me.
He knew what he was doing. He was setting you up for some hard work.
Setting me up. Well, look, it was times like that where he would just leave and it was just raining. And I could see the rain in the Irish countryside just coming.
Yeah.
Slowly. It's 10 miles away, but I could see it coming and I know it's coming. And you just carry on picking stones. And then I'd finish that work, go home, shower, clean, cry a little bit, And then I would go into the nightclub. I'm working till 4 in the morning. Wow. Then go to school the next morning at 8. Buses outside at 8. Get there. Off I go. And, you know, look, that's kind of never stopped throughout my life. And I think the lockdown now has kind of showed where you have to be slow down a little bit.
Yeah. And how's that affected you? I suppose, you know, going from 100 miles an hour to being told you can't do anything and stay home. Is it been tough?
No, I'm doing a lot more now. at home. Yeah. I'm reading books. I'm going out exercising. I packed on a few pounds there in the past couple of years, you know, and joined a group called Chef Fit, which is for chefs. You should look it up. It's great. It's basically a guy called Cameron in Dublin. He now lives in Australia. He set up a group online. It's all done by online training and apps, and you have to record everything, do videos and showcase what you're doing, and there's no getting away from it. Like, you get phone calls at all hours of the morning, and it is it's great because it's not just fitness and gym and stuff, it's mental health. And
yeah. And I think that's going to be that's going to be a challenge for everyone when we go from, you know, being able to and expected to work every hour God sends to then be told to stop. And then now trying to have to work our way back into that. I'm worried about it with my kids, especially. Kids are very adaptable and they've adapted to this isolation quite well. But they've also got to adapt going back the other way, you know.
Correct. Yeah. Like, you can become into a habit of it, you know, like chefs have that kind of tendency, and not every chef does it, where they drink or they do other stuff, you know, all the time, just to get away from the life of what we do, of the long hours. That every chef does it, but it's not a
I know from my time in Lanzarote, and I know it's probably, you know, that's a small little island but the biggest drinkers were the chefs, man, no doubt. They'd be finished a bit earlier than all the other staff, and then they'd go into the bar and they'd have a few pints in, and then it'd kind of, you know, that leads on, you know?
So, look, you know, the chef thing, you know, it's changing the lives of chefs. Myself and Decky is actually in it. And, Decky has shedded the pounds. The kilos are gone. He's trim, like proper six-pack and everything now, you know?
Has exercise always been something of you know, and running and stuff? Has that been something you've always done? Or?
No, to be honest with you, I was always the short, ginger, freckled, fat kid at school that got picked on. That was in home economics. It was not a good time, school. But I built up a good character from it, you know.
The reason I asked that running question, Johnny, is because you've done something that not many people get the chance to do, but everyone will know of this task. So you did you ran a little way with the Olympic torch, is that correct?
Yeah, I ran a couple of 100 meters with the Olympic torch. Yeah,
that's still something that not many people can say, but everyone knows what that challenge is, man. How did that come about?
Completely forgot about that there. Jesus, that's a hit from the past. The Olympic torch, that was 2012. Years ago, like, geez, that's ancient. I guess I was working in London at that point in Barbacoa. Got a phone call. I think Jamie and the team nominated me to take the Olympic torch. So me and a group of people were nominated. It was a great day. Like, I brought my family over, my mother and her partner, and we all went to dinner with Jamie and sat down, and what a bloody day. Like, being running, like, it's crazy because when you're in the bus, and I was sitting next to a guy, his name was Tony Wang, and he was one of the key guys in Twitter. And I didn't even know this guy. He's now moved on from Twitter, but he's in another big business. I'm sure he's doing really well for himself. Great guy, chatting to him, and just turned around and said, "What do you do yourself?" And he goes, "Oh, you know, I just work for Twitter." Nice. Very high up in Twitter at that point.
Yeah. I just worked for Twitter, low key.
low key, like, you know, and there's me, just a chef, you know. So we got out of the bus. There's hundreds of thousands of people surrounding the streets, like pulling you, and the torch comes along. And, like, it's a very serious thing with the torch, because I didn't realize, but they have security, like proper security around the flame.
Yeah, yeah. Because that can't go out, right?
No, they have a backup as well in a hidden location. I was asking all these questions, like, and yeah, it was great. Like, they lit the torch, you went in, they shoved you, run. And it's like, you kind of want to cherish the moment they tell you slow down, because you only have a couple of hundred meters. But when you're in it, and there's thousands of people screaming at you, trying to grab you, security holding them off,
you
leg it. So before you know it, it's already finished.
Your leg's done, yeah.
Your lint is done, back on the bus. And then they won't allow you off of the bus until the end of the route, which was like probably about 5 or 6 hours. So my family were running. My mother was running with her disposable camera. They all backed off to the pub. And
you're stuck on the bus.
I was stuck on the bus on a summer's day in London with all these interesting people, and got to the bar. They were all pretty well on it at that point. And then we all shut off for dinner to barbacoa with the gang. There was a good group of us that day. And we're doing shots of moonshine. Like proper moonshine,
eating barbecue,
proper American style there, you know. And oh, it was a great day.
And you worked in barbacoa as well, correct? Were you kind of you start and you ended up being head chef there? Is that correct?
Or? Yeah. I started off as a sous chef there. Got my ass whooped for many years. Proper whooped. When I say blood, sweat, and tears, there was a lot of every one of them. There was a lot of tears, there was a lot of blood, there was a like, not in a bad way, I mean, like, chefs with knives,
all of this
kind of stuff for people who are saying, what blood, what? There was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and it was fantastic. It built me into a character. You work hard. Like, we were working, I would start the fires in the morning, could be 7, and by the time I get home it could be like 1 in the morning, and you just go straight through. And that's my mindset, you know?
Yeah, that's the mentality you needed for that, right?
Yeah, and it's about looking after your other staff and making sure they work their hours. You don't want to kill anyone in the process.
You got to think about that for yourself as well. and that obviously kind of, you know, that's where you became, or did that really kind of, was that the reason you wanted to bring that to Holy Smoke, to Cork, bring that back to Ireland, that kind of style of cooking and the equipment? And what kind of, you know, what was the setup like there? Because that was that's a big restaurant, right, to be barbecuing for people.
Oh, look, me and the guys that worked there were fantastic. They, like, a couple of them are, like, my closest friends, and we still chat, you know. And I guess when you walk into the kitchen there, when you were cooking on fire, you would have a wood fire oven, Japanese robotic grills, a couple of different layers of the grill. You would have pits, fire pits, where you can bury animals and do all of that. You would have tandooris, you would have Argentine grills, smokers, and jaspers, and green eggs, and all these different types of equipment in there. So I guess then when the guys in Cork, Billy and Eddie, kind of wanted to come up with a new concept, they done their research and found myself online, and we kind of had a little chat, and they said they want to do something barbecue, and I said, well, you know, I know a little bit about barbecue, and, you know, I can help, you know. So we came over, and then we put in a smoker and a big massive grill in there, and then I found a wonderful man called Decky, you know, who I was speaking to actually just about before I spoke to yourself. I was talking to Decky, and it was funny because back then, like in Ireland, a lot of people don't have the experience in cooking on fire. There's a lot of good chefs out there that can, and not too many people can do it within a restaurant. It's different when you're cooking outside in your back garden to actually taking that concept, putting in a restaurant, providing for customers. You need to have the chef mentality, you need to have the barbecue, the passion, you need to have all those elements to make it work in a restaurant. It's not the same. And called Decky. Decky came in for an interview, met Decky, loved the guy, fell in love with him straight away. Within a few days, he already had found another job while I was in transition and getting back. So when you find someone, for anyone that's listening, and you're hiring someone, you find someone that you like, you get them straight away. If they have the passion and everything in that interview, get them in, you work with them, do a trial or you do whatever, you hire them. You don't let them go. Yeah. So I let Deki went, and he got another job because he has a family to provide for, of course. Mm-hmm. And just after that, two weeks later, I had a few people coming in and out, and I wasn't too happy with them, I'll be honest. Because I had Deki. I had Deki in my heart.
That was the bar that had been set, right?
Jesus, he set the bar feckin' too high. And I was like, oh, I missed Deki. I don't even know this guy, Deki. Like, you know, I met him. I like the guy, you know. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send Deki a message, an email. Or, you know, just, hey, Deki, hope you're doing well. Hope the new job is going good. How are you? ? And he responded and he goes, oh, it's okay. When he said it's okay, I knew I had it. It's okay. He should be like, it's wonderful, it's great, it's this. I was like, I got this guy. So I messaged back and I was like, oh, there's always a position here for you, you know? He was like, okay, I'm starting next week with you. So he came the week after and yeah, we kind of partnered up on this and it was great. Like, yeah, it worked for him.
And obviously, kind of, you know, people have barbecue in their head, but I don't know. I was listening to a previous interview you'd done, or I read somewhere that, you know, when you what we're doing in the garden when we light up the barbecue is pretty much just grilling meat, right? It's
technically
grilling meat. Yeah, so what would be the what would you class as barbecue now?
Well, I tell you what is quite interesting, right? Within KSG, I haven't done as much barbecue because my job role is an executive chef. So it's kind of, it's a different level and I do a lot of different kind of work now as well. And behind the scenes work with the chefs and the training and development. But during this lockdown, you know, when you said all this free time, I can't switch the head off. So like I got boards here. I got 1, 2, 3, 4. I got boards here that I'm working on projects.
Okay.
It's crazy. And I'm reading books and doing all of that. So I got in touch with two of my friends that we trained with in London in 15 together. And they're Aaron Craze, Dennis Duncanson. One lives in London, one lives in Australia. We're really good friends going to college. And what actually happened was, you know, life, you just kind of disappear and you go off your separate ways. During the lockdown, we reconnected and we set up a YouTube channel and it's called
I've seen it. Yeah, it's very good. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about cooking. And what we kind of wanted to do was to get together, have a little bit of fun, cook, challenge each other to different things, even though we're living around the world. Dennis is Australian in the Gold Coast. So he has that Asian influence, Australian summer vibe, you know. Even though it's winter, it's always summer. Then you got Aaron, who's the family man. And then you got me, who's the crazy meat, awful, kill an animal, eat everything, drink the blood kind of guy. And so I started lighting the fire. The barbecue is lit every day, pretty much. And the difference is barbecuing and grilling. Normally what people do is they do a barbecue and you can call it what you want as long as you're happy cooking it. But if you're putting sausages and burgers on it, that's grilling. So if you put on a steak on there, that's not a barbecue, it's grilling. Mm-hmm. Anything that's barbecue is low and slow. So cooking, the perfect temperature for cooking is 120 degrees. It's the golden word in barbecue for myself and probably for many other people, is you put the meat in and you close it and you put in the nice charcoal and the wood, and you put your meat in and you cook that slowly. That's barbecue. So that's the difference. So grilling and
when you say slowly, kind of, you know, if I was, I suppose it all depends on the size of the meat, right? But are we talking kind of 2 hours, 6 hours, or
it depends on the size, but you need to break down the collagen, you need to break down all the sinew and the fat and everything. A pork shoulder, that's probably about a 4 kilo or a 2 to 4 kilo piece. Pork shoulder could take up to 8 hours, 10 hours. I've had pork shoulders. I've had whole pigs, like through my time there in the past couple of years, traveling and stuff, going to Brazil where we were cooking whole pigs, or at the Big Grill Festival in Dublin. There was pigs there that took about 36 hours.
Okay. 'Cause
they were
Yeah, it's huge.
Oh, yeah. They were the size of a Mini Cooper.
I know that I've got some listeners here that are big foodies and that I'm quite interactive with through social medias and stuff. And I know there's a couple of people that eyes will be lighting up going, okay, so now I've got an idea of weight and time and what I can do. And then I've got a lot of people who are parents who are going, there's no way I can leave a barbecue cooking in my garden for 8 hours. My kids will be all over that. And, you know, the risk of it. So it's that.
Look. Keep the kids under control, but get the barbecue lit up. There's a couple of things. Like, if you're using gas or you're using electric, it's okay. I don't like it necessarily. I like charcoal. But if that's all you have, then get it going. It doesn't matter for me. As long as you're happy and you're
close putting the lid. 120, close
just
the lid.
Just go. Just go and have fun. I done a Birkin chicken there the last day. I do different barbecue from around the world and stuff, but I love a good chicken in the barbecue. And forgive me here if I'm going to ramble on here, but geez, the chicken was amazing. Like I bought this beautiful chicken. It was a corn-fed chicken. I got a nice can of beer. I brined the chicken, right? So this is a special thing, right? So with a beer can, so this is the can, you open up the can, you pour out half the beer into a big container, right? Water, beer. You can pour in a little bit of Jameson's whiskey in there if you want, right? That's the brine. So before people brine, and why you brine is you add 15% more moisture to your meat when you're slow cooking it. So you can brine your pork, your turkey. Meats like that need a little bit of love and brine, and it infuses the flavor. Thyme, bay leaf, garlic, lime, cayenne pepper, garlic powder, onion powder, turmeric. Smoked paprika, you throw it all in there, mix it all up with some salt, because salt gets right in there.
Okay.
Throw in the beer and the whiskey. Leave it overnight, 24 hours or overnight, whatever you
want. And how much, so you've got a chicken that sat there, you know, we all know look with the size of it, does it, how high would just it be?
Submerge it.
Okay.
Submerge it, yeah. So chicken is here, just have the water on
top. On top, cool.
Yeah, and that flavor will penetrate right into the chicken. It's amazing. It does make the chicken more juicy. So if you're cooking turkey or you're doing pork, you can do the same process. And you can have fun and change up whatever beer, whatever you want to throw in there.
Yeah.
Throw it in there, right? It's really good. This is the secret. So you take out the chicken, you rinse it off, you rub up Frenchie's mustard. Frenchie's mustard is American sweet mustard. The reason why we use that is because it's the sugar in it. So when you slow cook that, it caramelizes. So it's not spicy. It's not mustard like Dijon where, you know, that ham and cheese sandwich, you know, with mustard on top, my mother makes. It's not like that. It's sweet. Yeah. It's delicious. You could eat it with a spoon.
It's your hot dog mustard, right?
It's you could eat it with a spoon, like dip it in some chocolate or whatever if you want. Like, I wouldn't recommend it, but never tried it. So you don't know it until you try it. Like, rub up that chicken with Frenchie's mustard, and then you can make a nice barbecue rub. So you can use like, make it rub. You can buy one in the shop if you want, but you can make it. And like garlic powder, onion powder, brown sugar, oregano, bay leaf, smoked paprika, you know. You can even throw a beautiful jerk. Make a nice jerk with allspice and nutmeg and everything. You can make a beautiful Caribbean-style jerk chicken and use a beer. The beer that you can use can be anything from Guinness to a nice hoppy lager or something nice and crisp and summery.
If you're doing a nice Caribbean jerk chicken, you need to use Red Stripe, man.
I got a Red Stripe in the fridge. Red Stripe is the one. If you can get Red Stripe in the shops, then get Red Stripe. It's amazing. So you open up the can, you pour out the half into the brine, the other half leave it in the can. When you have the chicken rubbed up, let's go all jerk with this one, right? So you have it all rubbed up with the jerk spice and the Frenchie's mustard sweetness, delicious. Put the can that's open with half the beer inside the chicken, right up the butt. Just squeeze it right in there, chicken doesn't mind. Take that chicken. It's going to love it. Put it under the barbecue. So you got your barbecue nice and round. Put charcoal to one side. Get it nice and white. White charcoal is the perfect temperature. Close the lid. Put your wood off to the side so it smolders. You can order wooden charcoal online. Like, you can get it next day delivery from companies in Ireland. It's great. Like, in the UK and Ireland, you can get it. Use cherry wood, oak wood, apple wood. Have a little bit of fun and play with it. Oak wood is safe. Cherry wood is delicious. It's sweet. So sweet chestnut is also really good. That adds more flavor to your chicken. So put your wood offside. If it's small pieces of wood, soak it in water or soak it in Jameson's whiskey or soak it in a bit of beer. So then you smolder the wood rather than burning the wood.
Burn it.
If you burn it, you don't have any smoke. It just goes away and it's gone. It's ash. If you smolder it, you get the smoke. That's what you want. Have your charcoal off to the side. Have your wood here and put your chicken with a little tray underneath with a tiny bit of water in that tray. So then it's nice and cool over there. It's hot here. Put the lid down. Control the temperature. 120 degrees. 130 is fantastic. Open the vent. The air goes in, circulates around, and it causes that kind of oven circulation effect. And that's what cooks it. 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you take out that chicken. While the chicken is cooking, you get your hairbrush with your butter.
You can melt
your butter. This is what you need to do, right? So if you do this, tag in your Instagram. If you cook this at home, if you listen to this,
we want to see it.
Make this for us, for me and Nick. Tag us in on Instagram and we will reshare because we will love this. Get your little pot of butter, right? This is sexual talk here now. This is like, if you have kids under the age of 18, put them in their room at the moment because this is going to get built. You get the butter. Yeah. You can put a little bit of jerk rub in there as well. So some spice mix you can get in the shop. Yeah. Put a little bit of lime in there. Put a little bit of chicken fatty if you want. A little bit of goose fat, whatever you want. Throw it all in there. Melt it down. Get your wooden spoon, rosemary thyme, tie it up with a little bit of string. Dunk it. So every half an hour, you baste that chicken with that butter. It's going to be dripping into the fire. And that fire then will cause the steam and the smoke.
Yeah.
Oh, seriously. Wow. Can we pause for a few minutes here?
Yeah, we'll just give you a minute.
Just give me a few moments.
You can see the passion. And the funny thing is, John, there's been a couple of times and through these podcasts that I've mentioned that, you know, food, I'm not a massive foodie. You know, when me and my wife are going out, it's rarely for a dinner. It's normally for a gig or whatever. But my mouth is warring right now from that. And I'm most certainly going to try this beer can chicken. No.
Seriously, it'll be the juiciest sexual chicken in the whole neighborhood, in the whole of Cork City or Dublin or wherever you are.
Yeah.
It's going to be the juiciest chicken for miles.
Wow.
And it's so easily done. It's so easily done.
And you've put this on your food, Three Food Dudes, that's on your channel as well. So you can go and have a look at that and see how you've actually gone about it, the visual as well.
Like you'll have the can in the backside and the chicken and it's golden brown and it's you crack into the skin and inside it's just juice. It's like how do you explain it? It's like a jelly. It's just, it melts in your mouth. And then, if you're doing it for family, throw on, a couple of sweet potatoes on there and throw on some baked beans. And I think that recipe that I kind of said, I changed it up because we're doing jerk. You can, if you don't like spice, you don't have to put spice. You can do what you want with it. Play with it yourself. I'm only giving you an idea.
Make your own flavors and your own.
Do your own thing. Yeah. You know, you don't have to follow my recipes. You can take the idea and have fun with it and do whatever you want, as long as you do it and tag us in on Instagram. I think there's a recipe. Maybe that recipe might be going out in the Irish Examiner this week. So the spice, the rub, the marinade, and the hairbrush and everything. And it's on the channel on the Three Food Dudes. But look, it's about having fun. It's about eating that you're happy with and taking a few moments to yourself. Wow. And that's dirty.
I read again, obviously, you know, you've mentioned living in London, you've mentioned, the different parts of Ireland. You spent some time in San Francisco. Is that where you kind of found your passion for meat? I read they were doing a lot of curing their own meats. It was an Italian restaurant, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Incanto restaurant with a guy called Chris Cosentino. Really, really amazing chef. He has many restaurants now in California and around the country, around America. There was tough. That was the first time I went there, was when I graduated from 15, I flew over. to America, trained as a student, got my ass whooped over there even harder. Like, it's not an easy journey to hold. I'm not trying to turn people away from it. It's an amazing career to get in, but you have to really put your head down. And yeah,
you take some shit as well along the way, right?
You have to take a lot.
Earn your stripes.
Yeah, you take a lot of shit, but you take knowledgeable shit. Don't take shit. Don't take disrespect, and don't take shit from people. Yeah. Life is too short to be dealing with people like that. You get inspirational people that push you and drive you in the most positive way. Chris was a driver, and he's a lovely guy, a lovely chef. And everything that came out of his mouth, you just listen, and you keep your head down, and you say, yes, chef. And what he says is pretty much fact. Like, I would take it, and you learn from it. You don't make the mistake two times. If you do, it's okay, but don't do it three times. I would recommend that. It's a long flight back to the UK and Ireland. So you work hard for him, but you learn so much, and he drives you. And we were doing everything from whole animal butchery to game birds to everything, to making fresh pastas. It was tough, like learning all of that. They're a completely different world. Never been to America at that point. And, you know, it was great. I spent a good 2 years there at first, and then came back, worked in a restaurant called St. John's in London, which is a head-to-tail restaurant. It's known for that. Like Anthony Bourdain passed away, unfortunately. Amazing guy. He used to go there all the time, to Encanto and to St. John's. It was St. John's is one of Anthony's favorite restaurants in the world, at Fergus Henderson, where he used to eat the bone marrow on toast. So you get bone marrow roasted off, nice piece of sourdough bread grilled, simply done, fresh bread, with a parsley caper, shallot salad with some lemon dressing, and a little bit of Himalayan sea salt next to it. You scoop out the bone marrow, put it on the toast, rub it in, season with your little salad, citrus, like lemon, shallot, caper, beautiful, and you sprinkle your Himalayan sea salt on top. That was the St. John's dish right there. That's what Anthony loved.
Wow.
So working in places like that, like St. John's was great. Missed those guys. I haven't spoken to them in a couple of years now, actually.
Okay.
Say like 2 years. So I might have to give them a call during this lockdown and catch up with
people. Yeah.
You know, that's what it's all about. Like, you know, even though like you kind of lose touch with people, just make the phone call and just say hello.
I think I've certainly learned that through this podcast. You know, if nothing comes from this podcast long term, the amount of conversations and the amount of people that I've retouched base with, and there's been three or four that I'd never met before, you know, that I followed through or got kind of, you know, come across through YouTube or whatever. And I was just like, just ask, man, and went and had that conversation. And it's certainly I've had conversations with people that I've not spoke to in a long time through this this lockdown. It's shown me how you can actually be, you know. I was always too busy. I've never really been too busy.
You're never too busy. People say, oh, I wish there was more hours in the day. No, there's just 24 use them hours. Yeah. Use them wisely. Because if there was more hours in the day, you'll still fill it with shit to do.
You'll still be too busy.
If there's 36 hours, you'll fill that other 12 hours with shite. So spend a bit of time for yourself and have fun and be passionate about it and get in touch with people. So I will get in touch with them now. But like there was times that I was going in at 7 o'clock in the morning and skinning rabbits, skinning hares. Like it's in season and there's rabbits, like piles of them, and ripping the skin off and cutting them down and butchering them, and squirrels and hare. Oh, wow. hare stinks.
Yeah.
You open up a hare. Oh,
oh. Good.
A cup of coffee in the morning and there's 50 hares on the fridge there. It wakes you up, that's for sure.
With KSG, obviously I'm sure there's vegetarian options and things that need to be provided as well. Is that something that you kind of delve into, because obviously you seem very meat based and very I can't imagine you ever being a vegetarian.
No, definitely not. However, I've come to eat more veg with meat and stuff in the past, like, 2-3 years. Definitely eating a lot more grains and veg than I used to. Absolutely. And cooking veg over the fire. Like, I'm, you know, There's people.
Yeah, yeah. Barbecue doesn't necessarily have to be just meat, right? It's a style of cooking, you know.
Like, a really nice dish is you get a sweet potato, wrap it in bacon, and put it there. no, you can do many vegetarian dishes from the grill and the barbecue and have fun with it and enjoy it. It might not be as good.
I'm not a veggie. I'm not asking for me at all. Yeah, it was just a thought that popped into my head with your passion for meat and the amount of, you know, the amount of meat you're dealing with.
There's so many things you can do on the fire with veg. That's amazing. It really is. All different types of veg, like tomatoes and salsas and whole butternut squashes and whole sweet potatoes and whole courgettes and aubergines. Tossing them in nice herbs and stuff like that. And you can do beautiful skewers and stuff like that, you know. So I'm trying to say that it's really good as well. It really is. Within KSG, like we do an awful lot of veg. Everything is thought about within the company for the KSG because it's all about the food that we're giving to the people. So it's all the calories and the right quantity of protein and the veg. Everything is thought about and analyzed very creatively without affecting any flavors. So it's actually making the dish from here to here. That's what I love about it. And that's where I kind of got that interest of eating a lot more veg and especially joining the thing like Chef Fit, where like this time last year, I was like 98 kilo. And within the fitness training and working with the likes of KSG, seeing that because you're getting inspired by others, you're actually eating more veg. So eating more veg, eating more grains, eating good meat, eating balanced dishes, eating breakfast in the morning, which I never done before.
I never eat breakfast, Johnny. Do you find that would like, and I'm certainly not piling on the pounds, but I'd like to lose a little bit. And there was a rapper who from House of Pain. Do you know the brand House of Pain? Jump Around, Everlast, the main rapper of that. He was saying that he'd lost a load of weight recently, and he said that having a breakfast means he's not having the munchies at nighttime, which he's then sleeping on.
That's something that I really need.
I don't have a breakfast. My wife kills me, but
yeah. Look, porridge is an old classic, like, you know, a good porridge, but you can do all different things with the porridge. You can add whatever you want to it. It could be a simple breakfast, like with bacon, spinach, and tomato. That's healthy. Like, you got bacon, fine, it has a bit of fat, but get over that. If you work out and you eat a bit less, you lose the pounds. So eat healthy, eat at good times, eat healthy food, then you don't be pickish. Because I used to pick on shite before, pack on the pounds. So last year I was 98, now it's 83 kilos. So, and I'm still trying to shed down. Get to that right point and running like I couldn't even run before. But then what I feel is like last week I did 105 kilometer run in the whole week, and it was morning and evening running. 10 in the morning, could be 10 in the evening. Continuously every day, and one day then on the Saturday then like a half a marathon, that kind of thing. And I found that week I drank a lot more water. I ate breakfast in the morning. Some days I would have fruit and yogurt or a porridge or a piece of bread with some bacon on top with spinach and tomato. Simple nice lunch, healthy lunch. I wouldn't even eat meat for the lunch, even though I'm the meat eater. I would eat a nice salad for lunch, full of grains, and then I would eat a bit of meat for the evening time. So it could be a nice salmon that's cooked on the barbecue on the grill that I would have with some nice grains and stuff. That week, I don't think I could have done it if I'd ate a lot of meat that week. I wouldn't be able to run that distance.
Yeah, the kind of, you know, the sluggish feeling you may get from it rather than the,
So I was eating light and cleanse, This week, I won't be doing 100 and something kilometers because I've eaten a lot of meat.
Okay. So, yeah. But you're still running, right?
Today is Monday, isn't it? Last week, yeah. Still running. Still running. I'll do shorter runs. Slower. Yeah.
Well, John, we've got to the 50-minute mark, mate, and it's flown by. That's been really, really quick. It's been really enjoyable conversation. So, just to recap on where people can find you, on YouTube, you've got the Three Food Dudes.
Three Food Dudes, John Rahan on Instagram and Facebook, and come and visit me in Dublin.
Happy days, man. Happy days. And anyone who does do the beer can chicken, please do tag us, man. Obviously, when we're doing the promotion for this, I'll be tagging you all over it anyway. But yeah, they'll see it there. Please, please do. Because
add us on Instagram so we can see it, and then we'll reshare it. Like, it would be amazing if people listen to the end of my old conversation, you know?
No, I'm sure they will, man. They certainly will.
And get to that point of that beer can chicken. Have fun with it and be sensual about it, you know. Light some candles in the kitchen, you know, you got the fire going, a nice glass of wine, a nice cocktail, or just a nice get a nice ginger. If you're going to do the jerk, right, get a nice ginger beer and get a bit of rum and make a nice Caribbean. And you say cheers to those that are with us and cheers to those that can be with us, and you give a little bit for the people in the past as well. That's a Caribbean tradition. So you give it cheers to those that are with us and those that can't be with us, and have a nice Caribbean cocktail, some jerk
out
chicken.
Of many one people, man. John, beautiful. What a way to finish. Thank you so much for today. Really appreciated it, and all the best going forward, bud.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. Take care.
This is my dad's podcast. He's an isolated ape. We hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for your support.